Here we go. All righty, right to us at MyNorthWest.com. Come on in, everybody, to the State Roofing text line at 98973. All are welcome. Teeny tiny lady, I saw her back there. She acts like she's helping with the horse, and she just points at it. She'll choose the letter of the day in just a bit, but fine. Diving into the news. I jumped into Little Creek, which is the creek that runs into Big Creek, which then runs into the Yakima, Tom, and I got a big mouthful of it today, and I kept thinking, is there like cattle up the way that are pooping and peeing in it? Because I've heard that kind of stuff happens, but I'm still okay, so that's all good news. All right, the big news, I guess this is big news, because you wouldn't expect unions to be forming anywhere down in the southeastern part of the United States, but Amazon, with a bunch of whole people that work in these big warehouses, I think 5,800 or something in there, they've started voting. I think yesterday the vote finished. Monday they started. Tuesday they will finish it all up, and then they will have all the votes will now be tallied, and we'll get some idea as to whether or not they decide they would like to form a union there at that warehouse, because if they are able to get that going there, most likely it'll spread to all the other locations with the 800,000 employees or something like that that Amazon's got. So this will be the first time that Amazon has stared down the barrel of the union and lost.
Well, so far, yeah, and lost. Yeah, so far they've managed to successfully hold off any efforts at various places around the country, as has Walmart, for instance. So the voting actually has been going on for a month. It just wrapped up yesterday, I think. And so they figure it'll take a few days, maybe as long as a week. My guess is we'll probably know by the end of the week whether this was successful or not. The quote they're using to headline a lot of their articles is lighting a fuse. This would be seen if the union actually comes to pass. It could be seen as lighting a fuse for Amazon workers. And then they say if it really catches on at Amazon, there's no reason why maybe it couldn't catch on. And this would be a revival of a union movement, which has been, you know, ever since I think it peaked maybe in the 70s, but certainly was not as prevalent in our everyday lives for decades now. The union revival. I personally don't see it. I think this is a tough place to pull this off. Amazon points out that they are paying something like twice the minimum wage in Alabama. Now, I think it's pretty low in Alabama, but it's twice the minimum wage. It's a lot of jobs in a relatively beleaguered, economic sector there in Bessemer, Alabama. So I'm surprised it's getting this much attention, because I'm assuming that it will be a pretty significant let me phrase that. I'm assuming they're not going to be a majority. It could be a scant majority, like a one person vote majority, which would make it unionized. However, I do think that the argument that's being made by the people that are pro-union and anti-union is if it's even close, that will be considered, you know, like a step up for the union movement. So we'll have to see the most recent votes on these kinds of things. Sometimes they're wipeouts against the union. Sometimes they're relatively close. Union still is lost. I'm assuming they're probably going to lose here. The one hope, they said, because the month-long voting is, you know, it's taken so long, they think the early votes, however many of those that came in, were probably anti-union, because that was before the union people had much contact with the employees, and Amazon heavily influenced the early people that voted. They say the union seems to have made some inroads among the employees of late, and so if the union side did win, it would be because of a late surge. Finally, I think the best hope that they have is that if this is seen in some kind of racial lines, this is what's the most interesting thing. And sorry, John, I don't mean to be, filibustering this. Did you want to jump in or about
Alabama is the most unionized state of the southern states other than Kentucky. About 9% of the population is in a 9% in the population or 8.7 is in some union. The question is always, what does the corporation say to the worker? Like, if here's what you gain and here's what you lose. Amazon says, we want everybody to vote. They do want to hear from everybody. Whether mm-hmm. they want, of course, they want you to vote no non-union. But then you start to think, okay, what do I lose if I join the union? What do I gain if I join the union? And then you start to say, okay, they're going to take X amount of dollars from you every single month, and they're going to take that money, and then what do they do in return for that? Because what we can do is, rather than you giving the $600 a month to the union, we'll do this, this, and this. But if you give up that thing, we're going to negotiate with you differently, and we won't be able to, you know, you're going to lose some of that. So the people that are in the Amazon, they've also have high turnover. That's the other part of it. If you're in that union, you join the union, and then you find yourself working for Amazon for only a few months, and ultimately, what are you getting out of it? So then you decide, well, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to stay in this job for very long anyway. I'm not going to pay that extra money to have that union. It doesn't protect me. The union thing was always, the person was in for 30 years, and the union was there, and the union had their back the whole time. But if you're popping in and out of a job, I think you're less likely. The same thing if you're renting and you don't have any roots down in a community, you're less likely to vote for what's happening locally with your legislator. So if you're just sort of in there and it's like, well, I'm only going to do this for a little bit and then I'm moving on to something else, you probably would not be wanting to have the $600 or whatever it is every month that they take out of your salary. Ultimately, when you mentioned the race part of it, Tom, that's coming into play.
Yes. Well, so one of the I think this is where the union might have a shot. Again, I don't think it's going to be enough, but I think it's something like 85% of the employees there are black, and it is being sort of like twined with the civil rights movement. That you see this, if you start seeing it as a civil rights issue, then you don't look at it so much as a, am I personally as this one man or woman benefiting, but more as a social cause that would be good. That could maybe turn the tide a bit. And one last thing, John, I think was interesting. They said that in a lot of these cases where unions have voted, even if it was just close, or if they voted to actually unionize in other situations, and I can't remember which big company it was, but they can then turn around and close the shop down. Which has happened across the country. Said, okay, you guys want this unionized? You know, Amazon just can't make it work. And it just doesn't pencil out, Bessemer, Alabama. So we are going to close shop and maybe move a little place, you know, someplace a little more kind to... So, I mean, there are a lot of, options that Amazon has, even if they happen to be surprised by this vote.
Yeah, boy, that would be... If I were there... And somebody said, you know what, if we do this, they're going to leave. You're thinking, I'm not voting for that. I'd rather have the job at $15 an hour than at whatever the union can get me plus the other thing. So, yeah, that would stop me. I just voted no on it. Just in my head, thank you, Tom, for that.
And then I would balance you by voting yes. And then where would we be?
And then well, we'd both be out of a job because Amazon, they've already proved to us that they can pick up and leave. We're watching that now happening in Seattle as they head over to Bellevue. Let's whip over
they're expanding to Bellevue. They're not leaving Seattle. We still have like a 50,000 employees here in Seattle. They're just expanding to Bellevue.
Are they expanding in Seattle, or are they shrinking in Seattle?
Well, they're not shrinking in Seattle. They're holding firm.
Are they growing in Seattle? Are they growing in Seattle?
Well, not necessarily, but maybe.
Okay. That means they're growing in Bellevue.
Seattle can only hold so much.
Nope.
Yes.
They're growing in Bellevue because Seattle sucks for business. In fact,
I know. That's the narrative you want, but it's not true in Seattle.
Let me ask you this, Tom. Are they growing in Seattle? We know they're growing as a business. Where are
they're
they
not growing
to
as
grow?
Much as they are
Bellevue?
In Bellevue?
No. Are they growing as they grow as a business? Are they growing in Seattle or are they growing in Bellevue?
I think they said they were going to add up to, 5,000 more jobs to equal 50,000 in Seattle. And that is about what Seattle can handle. So, and then they're expanding. So Bellevue is getting the beneficence of it.
They're building They're building a building in Bellevue, Tom.
I know. And so Republicans try to make it argue Seattle's so anti-business. If they really wanted to make a point, Amazon, they could uproot themselves and move across the water. Instead, we're just becoming a bigger, Puget Sound hub. That's all to the good.
So there's no difference
sides of the water.
Right. So there's no difference between Seattle and Bellevue as far as the business is concerned.
There might be now, but we've already established it in Seattle. Yes. I'm sure you'd rather go to business friendly, but remember, it's still part of King County. It still has a social conscience. Amazon claims to want to help on the homelessness issue and all of that. So it's not, Bellevue is not that different. In our eyes, it may seem like, oh, Democrat and Republican, but in the business world, it's the Puget Sound economy.
In the business world, you pick up and you vote with your feet. Amazon is not growing in Seattle.
Well,
Amazon
Expedia came here. Wasn't Expedia across the water? They came here. I mean, so it's back and forth.
They're over in that building that used to be part of the big pharma thing over there, right? So what you have is Amazon, and Jeff Bezos will do anything he can to avoid the taxes, and certainly he gets tired of being the evil guy and the villain that the Seattle City Council. When they have a tax named a tax named after you, you have an idea that maybe you have a target on your back. The Amazon tax, right? It's like, whoa. Where can we go? Let's go across the water where they want us to be there, where we can build a building, where we can employ people, where people can be over there. Whether Expedia needs to be in Seattle so that people working in Expedia feel like they're part of some urban sort of coolness. Yeah. I guess Amazon's like, we'll give up the coolness.
They're not giving it up, John. You're not listening to me. They're not giving it up. They're keeping it here and expanding across the water. Bellevue is like a big part of Seattle. It's this whole area.
Why not expand in Seattle?
Because we've already got too big. Amazon has too big a footprint in Seattle as it is.
Oh,
we don't
too big.
Need,
so there's no more
we
room.
We don't want to become
there's
a
no
one
more room.
Company town.
Okay, yeah, that's what it is. World Health Organization has come out with the latest propaganda via China, which is basically, hey, we've done some investigating, we've looked into it, and we are pretty sure that it's, well, what did you guys want us to say? The fact that the people that went into the Wuhan laboratory prior to getting in there, China did everything they possibly could to destroy the files, to hide the stuff. They wouldn't let them to go to certain places. It's like going into Iran and trying to find, you guys, you're not enriching uranium, are you, up to a level of being able to produce? No. Can we go over here and look? Nope, can't go over there. Can't go over there and look. Same thing in China. Same thing in the Wuhan when it comes to the laboratory. What was the origin of this virus? World Health Organization has said what, Tom?
They said that they are not happy with what China gave them access to. And so this report, it's almost as if they're disowning their own report. They send all these people over and they come up with these conclusions. And they said, but we didn't have access. So the question of the origins is still open. And everybody, so it's one thing. So the Biden administration's complaining. 13 other, Western European countries and the like are complaining about China. Everybody's complaining about China. And even WHO now has gotten on board saying, yes, we need to do more than what we've had access to. We need to work harder on getting China to respond to the kind of data we need to establish the origins. So basically they throw up their hands and say, as far as the origins, everything is inconclusive. Now, the report seems to indicate that the lab possibility that it came from a lab is the least likely. But until you can establish what is the most likely, that's not going to, hold much water for people that are already skeptical.
China lied to the world. I mean, and the WHO, and so did the World Health Organization. When China came out and said, "Oh no, it doesn't cross transmit. It's not going human to human." That was the first lie. They knew that was a lie. They knew the numbers, and they lied. And the World Health Organization, they said that. They said there's no contamination.
No, I know they said
no cross human to human, right?
Yes.
And they also knew because they had earlier information that. That people were getting sick because they had gone into the hospitals and they had seen this virus was starting to move. And they killed the guy that did the first announcement on it. They were able to have him killed, a 34-year-old guy. And this is an. And then the World Health Organization covered for China as well and told everybody, nothing to worry about here. It's not a virus, not anything that we can have to worry about. And they stuck it out there. This virus spread. And the World Health Organization covered for China is China lied to the world and it spread into Europe and came into the United States. And I don't know how many people could we have gotten a handle on it sooner if we didn't have the World Health Organization and China together spreading propaganda. That's part of the story. I don't think we'll ever get it from China. And we've just seen that we went in there to investigate and they cut off and stopped a number of us from getting more information. So what do we do at this point? How do you take China to court or do something in order to pray to get the World Health Organization to actually step up and represent all of us, not just China?
Well, but John, you should be cheered by the fact that they came out and condemned the inefficiency of this latest report because of China's lack of access. They want access to, like, in September before the outbreak. They want to see what was like pre-outbreak and trace from September up until whenever, you know, December or January when it kind of, went worldwide. They want that data, and they don't have access to the data. So they're trying to pressure them. Now, as we all know, Americans try to pressure China, and even Russia tries to pressure China. China is its own, makes its own decision. So I don't know how much worldwide pressure can laid at their feet or actually be effective. But they are, at least by going public with this take on the report, they are trying to pressure China, just like we wouldn't be pressured into revealing things that we don't want to reveal to the rest of the world. My hunch is that China will be dragging its feet at best.
Now, can we keep saying China without fear of somebody punching somebody?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Because I saw the video of that 65-year-old lady getting whacked yesterday in New York City at 11:30 in the morning. Oh, my God. I don't know if that'll be hate crime or not. Oh, it's terrible. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic. All right. Not as comforting as the Jesse Jones stuff, knowing that Jesse's there for me. But, you know, still endearing in its own way, Tom.
Yes, it's a station-wide comfort, not just a one-man comfort, see?
So I don't have to just go to Jesse just for that comfort?
Sometimes you can, and sometimes it takes a village of Gyro 7 employees.
Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
It's a lot of pressure on one man. People crying on his shoulder. Yeah, and Jesse. Yeah. By the way, I went through the supermarket today. I was doing and got a new recipe, and I thought, I can't wait to talk to Rachel about some of the new spices I bought. And then I thought,
oh my God, are we going to have a new segment called Kitchen Corner? John Curley's Kitchen Corner.
No. And then I thought,
we could
not
do recipe swaps. Oh, it'd be so fun.
We're not going to do that. We'd talk about actors that steal roles from others. I would like to think any actor that's willing to do this certainly deserves the role.
Well, I'm not starting until you tell me about the hot dish you're making, John Curley. Give me that recipe. Okay.
I'll post it on my FaceTube. Go ahead.
Okay. Send me a little 3x5 card with it written in loopy cursive. So this story comes to us from TheRinger.com, and it's entitled, "It's Time to Stop Letting Actors with Hair Play Bald People." And it is written by someone who alleges that they themselves are bald, a bald writer. And they specifically have a bone to pick with Jared Leto, who has a magnificent full head of cascading hair, but is playing a character in House of Gucci who is bald. So I'll just read you a paragraph that this writer said. "This is, of course, a long-standing Hollywood practice. Rather than hire Paul Giamatti, Jason Statham, J.K. Simmons, or Leslie David Baker to play a bald character, productions cast actors with full, thick heads of hair and then bald them up. It's double dipping. You get the clout from a famous hot person's name without them looking hot, and then they also get the actor cred for being brave enough to look regular on camera," which reminds me of Charlize Theron in Monster, who was so brave for being a, quote, ugly character. So I think that this article is written tongue in cheek, but there's a little bit of truth to it, that this person actually does feel like, hey, why don't you give the baldies the roles? But, you know, I think it's not the same as what's come up in years past as far as should characters in wheelchairs be played by able-bodied people, or should we give those roles to people who actually are in a wheelchair? I don't think that this is quite comparable to that. But what I took from this article, because he he kind of chastises actors who are getting hair restoration surgery, just saying, you know, just be bald, be who you are. And it just made me think, okay, this is the first time that a man is understanding what it's like to be a woman who's aging, because we have so many pressures to, you know, get Botox or plastic surgery and wear makeup and dye our hair. So I guess going bald is the male equivalent of that. That's a little bit more relatable.
I don't know. John's gone all those other things too.
I do. Thank you. That's right. A lot of Botox. No plastic
makeup.
Surgery, Tom.
That's, a lot of makeup.
That's
now. Hair
that's
dye.
True.
Old make. Hair dye.
What do you call that with dye. Your teeth? That would be oral surgery.
Well, that's okay. We're not talking about me. We're talking about actors. I would say that any actor willing to shave his head, so they're not wearing a bald cap, right? They're really, are they shaving their head?
No. He said specifically not shaved heads. It's looking like a bald person when you actually.
Yeah, he's
have
cool with people shaving their heads. So he's
I think
John,
if you make the sacrifice, if you shave your head.
Yeah,
I was always amazed at how actors like, wow, the guy shaves his head and then, or you know, really short haircut, and then you see him like a year later, you think, oh well, it's because they shot the movie 3 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
But in this case, this guy's it's tongue in cheek on it.
The
hire bald actors instead of they want a name. You want to put money behind it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have hair or don't. Have hair, you know, it's how much money your name can make for the box office.
So I know a sometime actor who refused to shave his head to play King and I. I mean, what gives, John?
Tom, that was high school. that was a all girls school, and they needed it was myself and Jim Farley and a few other people. I got cast as Yul Brynner.
Oh, this is like a bosom buddy situation.
the woman came in the night. Opening night, I'm in this little dressing room they'd set up for me, and I'm putting on my Bob Kelly makeup kit. I'm like looking kind of tannish brown. I'm very close to like the governor of Virginia.
Virginia, you know? Yes.
Right. Or the prime minister.
Tan
of Canada.
Mom.
Very tan. And I'm slicking my hair back with Vaseline, and this mom walks in and she says, would you? Could you? It would mean a lot to the girls if you would shave your head. And she was holding a straight edge razor and had a bowl and a towel over her shoulder. And I was like, really? And it would really send a signal to them that you really care. I was like, I care. I'm going
to
be dancing and singing. And look at all this makeup I'm putting on. And she's like, it would really, really mean a lot. And I thought Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, three shows. Do I shave my head for three shows, Tom?
For 6 months of high school humiliation.
Right, because the difference between you and a Hollywood actor doing it is that it's worth millions of dollars from them to have a shaved head. For you, what?
Nothing. Forget. Yes, but let's not forget that just 2 months earlier, I had permed my hair thinking I was going to get a role as the spokesperson
Annie.
For the American Dare.
That's what I was going to say, Annie.
Okay, you know what?
At the all girls school,
feeling a lot of personal things about my hair, and I'm not feeling supported. Jacob, Sean, someone help me.
This is quite a hairy situation.
Okay,
this isn't therapy, this isn't hair therapy.
Let's get to the root of the issue.
Curly's kitchen.
Sorry.
Corner.
Sorry. I had permed my hair for a commercial for National Dairy Association, and I didn't get it. And everybody in the show, everybody in high school was like, yeah, sure, you're up for that job. I said, I was. That's why I permed my hair. They go, no, you just permed your hair because you're gay. I go, no, I'm not. I'm not gay. I was going to get a job. I was going to be on a television commercial. Yeah, sure. And then I would shave my head and come in the next day on Monday and be like, I shaved my head because I was in The King and I. Like, yeah, sure you were in The King and I.
Shall we
You
should have
got that dairy roll. There was a kid in my 7th grade class who was in a Bagel Bites commercial, and he shot to popularity so fast. Every girl wanted to be with him. That could have been you if you got this dairy commercial. You could have been a tall glass of milk.
I still remember the lines. When I come home from school... there's nothing I like better than a big, tall, cool glass of milk. And Mom and Dad say they don't mind that I drink so much of it. They say it's good for me. All I know is it just tastes great. That was the line. There it was. Perfect.
What about
perfect,
that?
Everybody.
What
about
and then
that
one
over?
Of your curly, permed hairs falls into the pristine glass of milk and
right.
ruins your
and
cancer.
Silence.
Uh-huh. Whatever happened to the guy who got
shall
it?
Shall I say to him of women, shall I educate him on the ancient line? Right, Tom?
Yes.
King and I, right there, baby. There you are. There you are. There you are. Dance on a bright cloud of music, shall we fly? All right, thank you, Rachel. Wow, there's a crazy bit of stuff all happening. You know, if it wasn't for Tracy Taylor, that segment, you think to yourself, how long could that have gone on for, right? Without a commercial break, could we have done scenes from King and I and then you in high school,
yes.
Tom? I think you were in Guys and Dolls.
Hello Dolly. I sang a piece from Guys and Dolls, but yeah. Hello Dolly, May, all the Jerry Herman stuff.
I was in Oklahoma.
Hey!
Oh!
Oklahoma, where the
wind comes swimming down the plain.
I love it.
Yeah, I was one of
who
the.
Who were you?
Girls.
Were you a Ado Annie?
No, I was never a lead role because I was really off key, so I just sang in the background.
You're a good dancer.
I wasn't even that either, but you know.
Buggy's Auto Service Centers, 16 locations, been around for 50 years. We still need to find out when their birthday is. Tom, this news just breaking. G. Gordon Liddy passes away at the age of 90. Undercover operative bungling the Watergate break-in.
Yeah.
And it was Nixon who said, this guy doesn't seem to have his head screwed on correctly. That was even Nixon talking about. But G. Gordon Liddy was loyal to the end to Nixon. Mm-hmm. He was one bizarre individual who went from being, as he described, sort of a puny weakling to all of a sudden toughening himself up by doing all sorts of physical exercises, eating rats and holding his hand over a burning lit candle. And when he was asked about it later on, he says, it's a trick of not minding, which was a line he took from Peter O'Toole from a 1962 movie of Lawrence of Arabia. He went on later on to do a talk show. He had books mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of other stuff. He was intense, had a head like a bowling ball, a big bristling mustache and piercing eyes. The age of 90 years old, G. Gordon Liddy. It's, you know, it's one of these things where more and more of our, you know, I guess people that were sort of our generation just fading away.
Yeah.
Have you seen it, Tom? Like, if you start to pay attention, every 2 weeks is another, oh my gosh, oh yeah, oh my God, mm-hmm. that guy's gone. That guy's gone.
Yeah, they're not exactly of our generation. But when we were growing up, they were like the adults, and that generation is now dying. So that's interesting. He's 90, so he's the same age as my mom and Ursula's dad. The Watergate people are mostly, gone by now. But G. Gordon Liddy, he was one of the original 12 plumbers, I think. And, he was true to the end. You might say that he's kind of like, I don't know, maybe like a Paul Manafort type. Paul Manafort never turned on a Trump like, say, Michael Cohen did. And he was rewarded in certain circles and condemned in the opposite circles for that very loyalty. Yeah.
Yeah. So
big name.
I never had he was doing a thing for CPAC when I was in Washington, D.C., and I was going to go. Somebody said, hey, you want to meet G. Gordon Liddy? And I think at that point he was doing a television show or a radio mm-hmm. show, and I was like, I'm going to wait and go over there and talk to Peter Jennings.
Good choice.
Interesting guy. Thank you. Yeah. Who smelled, by the way, he reeked of cigarettes.
Is it really? Wow. Yeah. That's the other thing. A lot of Peter people that smoked that we never were aware of because smoking was not allowed on the air.
Peter Jennings was one time caught. He would keep a cigarette going to the left of him down in the bottom in an ashtray, and he would smoke them in between commercial breaks, and then he would sort of and then push the smoke away as they would come back on camera.
Hmm. His wife left him for Richard Holbrooke, a great diplomat.
I hope Richard Holbrooke is still alive.
No, I think he's died too.
Oh, my God, you've nothing but bad news, Tom. Tracy Taylor, help!